I'm just going to adjust this a little bit. Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Stephanie Pokup, and I'm here today on behalf of plaintiff appellant Deb Tobacco. I have two things that I would like to discuss with the court today. The two reasons, the two strongest facts that I think create a genuine issue, a fact that should be reversed and remanded for trial by a jury in this case. And lastly, I'd like to take a minute just to explain my request to ask the court to provide a definitional use for the word tokenism in Title VII race discrimination claims. The first and probably most important fact that I think is determinative and requires jury evaluation for credibility in this case is the fact that the decision maker in this case got the same directive that every other decision maker, every other department head in the entire Avera system got in 2022. She was told to achieve a 5% budget improvement in her department's budget. And in fact, the defendant in its statement of material facts described that the decision maker determined to meet the 5% required cut by determining to eliminate tobacco's position. The real problem with that analysis and the trial court's adoption of it is that it ignores the decision maker's testimony that she did not ever review the ARI budget before she made her selection. She did not calculate the budgetary savings that eliminating tobacco's position would produce. And she didn't even approach the decision making with the aim to have a number in mind. I mean, this wasn't even like horseshoes. She just didn't even calculate it. And we don't even have to get into the fact that she made a reduction in force decision at the same time that there were at least three open positions, which they continued to advertise and ultimately fill about a month after this reduction in force.
Counsel, I was confused on one factual point.
Yeah.
One place in the record, it says up to 150 were fired in this RIF. I think mostly Caucasians were fired in the RIF. Is that by this decision maker, or is that throughout the whole country?
That's,
or is that throughout, what area does that cover?
That is every different department making their own independent and unique decisions. They each have
Did this decision maker make one decision about one person?
One decision for 60 employees, and three of them are similarly situated, including Deb
Tobacco. So this decision maker did RIF 60 people.
No, she riffed one.
Okay, good. That's what I asked.
There's one. There's one riff out of the 60.
Proceed with your argument. That was my question. Just one.
But you can't make the budget determination that is described throughout the defendant's arguments as a 5% budget requirement without actually knowing what 5% is. And that is a serious failing of, and is in this district court's opinion, and we think that
is there anything in the record to indicate what the cost savings actually was, if there was?
Well, there is some documentation, but basically no, because even at her deposition, that was not a decision that had ever been explained, or she didn't even bother to figure it out during discovery. So, no, not really. I mean, we were able to get some documents.
Well, our main point was that this position was funded by grants, right? Is this the position not funded by grants?
This one was not funded by grants.
Right. And that was a big difference in terms of the other office.
But by her
I think in Rapid City.
Go yeah, excuse me, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
I'm excited to
proceed.
Get to this. But by her own testimony, she creates the material issue of fact because it's either a requirement that she must do a 5% budget adjustment, either up or down. It was her choice, and she decided to reduce. Or she can just kind of get a feel for it. And she kind of like suggests that she was going on intuition, but the directive from the supervisor and the directive everyone else got was you have to make a 5% adjustment to your department's budget.
So it's not enough to say, for example, a decision maker, I'm just saying more broadly, you know, we got to make this 5% budget cut. I know that if I fire somebody, that's going to help towards meeting that budget cut, and that's good enough. I mean, it's not great, but why doesn't that eliminate racial discrimination as a possibility?
Because in this case, there was a very specific directive, and it's one that she claimed that she did. It's one that in the defendant's statement of material facts, she said that she made the calculation, and that's how she determined it. And then when we take her deposition on the record, she admits that she did not. The other serious...
Counsel, what is there in the record to indicate that there was racial animus behind the choice?
I think probably the most direct one is Ms. Tobacco was told that her race was a factor in her hire. These are disputed facts, but they're still facts in the record.
Well, counsel, how does that harm the employer?
That one doesn't, but it does.
If they do, quote, affirmative action, unquote. Go ahead.
It doesn't harm the employer. It's the basis for a claim of tokenism, though, because if you're just doing it for show and the person is being treated differently than all the other similarly situated employees, which they also admit there are, the two other employees, managers, are also similarly situated according to their statement of material facts. But the safety issue that resulted in the only two Native American members of this four-person team going out door to door in a neighborhood in an area that was deemed to be too dangerous for Nick Palko and Medler, to the point that two other supervisors intervened so that they would be able to pause their duties while Ms. Tobacco and Mr. Forney continued to go out. The level of danger.
But those two did not protest, did they?
No, they didn't. They did their co-workers' work.
Yeah, but they did not protest at the time, saying it's an unsafe area.
No, they didn't believe it was an unsafe.
Right. Proceed.
But Avera administrators did, and they actually suggested that they could their coworkers could be shot or stabbed. I mean, it's pretty reasonable to say if you think that somebody might be shot or stabbed, you probably shouldn't be doing that. So the ultimate question is like, why is it okay for the two Native American people to go out if they could be shot or stabbed, but these other two non-Native American employees are going to be protected?
Now, I thought that was a choice, though. Like, the other people were kept from it, but nobody told, I don't think anyone told Ms. Tobacco, you have to go door to door in this area, right?
Well, in fact, the research scientist in charge of the study said that she should. And they've been doing it, and it had been highly successful. So the idea that somebody would be potentially subject to physical violence is, at a minimum, that's an issue that a jury should decide about.
So your position is they did tell her that she needed to go door to door, even though the other two didn't have to?
Yeah, at the beginning of her, when she is appointed to be the manager, the research scientist said, yeah, you should go do this.
Counsel, did you intend to cite us to something or to make argument concerning
I was afraid that the panel would think it was audacious for me to ask for a definition from the court for tokenism. But the Pricewaterhouse decision proves that you've got to start somewhere. And in this case, witnesses and parties and even the district court are using tokenism to indicate a form of racial discrimination. And so I'm basically asking the court, even if it's a Merriam dictionary term, because it's really hard to determine what to argue and how the court evaluated its finding about tokenism when there isn't a definition.
I guess one of the issues with it is the point that Judge Benton came up with, which is, would tokenism then be actionable on the front end by other employees, right? Because they're, you know, or potential employees. And so it's a much broader question, I think, than this case.
Yes, but it is a very common issue, and it is in the lexicon, it is in social science, and it showed up in this case. And I'm sorry, I used up all of my time.
We'll give you a minute for response. Ms. Marshall?
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Lisa Marceau. I have the honor to represent Avera McKinnon in this case. I'm here asking that this court affirm Judge Cammie Thieler's decision in this discrimination case that also involves a RIF, which notably is a case in which Judge Thieler, after scouring the evidence, determined that the plaintiff did not substantiate with probative evidence her allegations that the employment actions were due to her race. Instead, she determined that the plaintiff asserted was simply conclusory and insufficient arguments. With the time I have here today, I'd like to address two different things. One, how the plaintiff's assertions in this case do not meet the standard of showing a discrimination case. In particular, in the RIF cases, Judge Smith and Benton, your 2011 Rolfe case, Judge Smith, your 2020 Button case, and the 1994 Bouchero case set that standard that she has not met this requirement.
Is it different if it's a RIF of one by this particular decision maker department? And do you disagree with that characterization of what happened?
There is no holding that there's a RIF of one. You look at the entity as a whole. Here, Avera as the entity did terminate over 150 individuals. The decision makers did need to make decisions as to who in their department to terminate if they needed to decrease the budget or increase. And here, they could not increase the budget because most of everything that came into a Avera research entity, where the specific department in which this employee was employed, came from grant money. Grant money takes a lot of time to get, so you cannot simply go out and increase your budget.
Well, counsel, how do you make a RIF determination without calculating cost saving?
I think, Your Honor, that is a thing that the Harvey and Rolfe cases have specifically talked about, that maybe the 5% here was or was not met is not determinative. That's a business decision. And even if the business decision is unsound or not perfect, that doesn't mean that the RIF did not happen. Here, Dr. Elliott intricately knew the amount of money coming in from grants, knew that Ms. Tobacco's salary was primarily paid by Avera money that was not grant money, and knew that she wasn't having money coming in. So she knew, because this is what she does, she's the head of the department, she knew that the only way to decrease the amount of money that was close to even 5% was to reduce this position, the other managers, we don't have similarly situated people, the other managers, their salaries was primarily being paid by grant money, as the other employees were as well.
Does it start to look fishy, though, to combine the two things, which is you have a decision maker that fires one employee, and that decision maker doesn't know how much that one employee is going to save in terms of budgetary concerns. And so it kind of looks arbitrary. You're leaving.
I don't think it looked arbitrary here because she knew this is the only person whose salary was not coming in from grant money. So it's not an arbitrary decision. She may not have known that it was going to save.
Was there some policy in the company or the organization of Avera McKinnon that indicated that there was a preference for reducing this type of an expense that was coming from grant money?
They had to reduce
or not
the budget.
Coming from grant money.
They had to reduce Avera's money that was being spent or increase the way that you could fund your department. There was no ability to increase the funding of the department that quickly. And the directive to all of these departments was you had to either increase or decrease. And that was the directive for the RIF.
So there was no policy.
There was a policy that all of the department managers were told you
were
need to increase.
Were they told to prefer the reduction of this type?
No. They were told they had the option to get more money into their departments somehow or decrease their operational expenses. And here, the only thing that could be done by Dr. Elliott was to decrease Avera money coming in, not the grant money coming in, Avera money coming in, which this reducing this person's position was going to do. And this Dr. Elliott went to her supervisor and said, I can reduce this position in the reduction in force, and her supervisor, who also knew of the grant money versus Avera money, said that is sufficient. So and that is what in Harvey we say is a business decision, not reviewable.
And to get back to my question, so you've got this combination of one person removed by the decision maker. You have a RIF of, you get the RIF of one, and then you don't know the cost savings. And so I think what you're saying is it all hinges on how we treat the grant versus non-grant distinction. Because the somebody who's not given a grant is going to have a greater budgetary, you know, impact than somebody who's on a grant, that's why that decision was made. It was not racial animus. Am I reading the situation correctly?
I think you are spot on, Judge. Okay. I think that's exactly what happened here. There is no evidence that the decision made was connected to race. It was connected to the money coming in from the grants versus the Avera money.
Let me ask you a question that I don't think is in the briefs. I don't think it's in district court. Feel free to correct me. But do we even know today what percent this dismissal of this one person accomplished compared to 5%?
The exact percent is not in there, but what is in there is Dr. Elliott's testimony that she went to her supervisor, who gave the directive to all the departments of increase or decrease, and said, this is how I can decrease my budget. Is this sufficient? And he said, yes, I understand that this is grant money. You, Avera Research Institute, are completely different than Avera McKinnon that have, you know, nurses and this
well,
and that.
Well, was she ever asked in any form, interrogatories, depositions, whatever, or your company ever asked, what percent did it end up being?
I don't recall that specific question being asked or answered. What I recall is in the record that her supervisor said, this is sufficient for the directive for Avera Research Institute. You've met your requirement.
So,
and there's nothing about race.
So the implication of the last sentence, and the district court didn't make this express finding, I don't think. The implication of your last answer is that it did amount to 5%. It met her goal of 5%.
I think the implication is that it met her goal of getting the 5% increase or decrease, and she didn't need to do anything more, and she couldn't do anything.
But the district court didn't find that?
The district court found that there was a RIF.
Yeah,
it was not tied to race.
Didn't, you know what I'm driving at, I'm sure. The district court didn't find that, right?
Well, the district court noted that it was sufficient for Avera Research Institute to have this done to meet the directive. That, I believe, is in the court record. And I only have a few minutes left, and I want to quickly then maybe mention this tokenization issue. This is not something that this court needs to look at. I think it's something this court has already looked at time and time again. Judge Smith, in your 2025 Sherman case, there the plaintiff complained that she had feelings, that she was not treated well, that she did not matter. And this court rejected that tokenization, saying that's just stereotyping. That's nothing new. That's what this is. Here the plaintiff was believing she was not treated well. She did not matter. And the 2020 Pastor
case. Well,
cake,
stereotyping, going back to many cases, is a cause of action against a company, right?
A feeling, you have to have evidence of it. And I think that's what Judge Thieler decided here, is there's not evidence to support that anything was related to race. So you can certainly make an argument that I believe this was because I was black, I was Native American, I'm old.
What about the knocking on doors? That's why I asked so many questions about it. I heard opposing counsel say on the opening she was supposed to knock on doors when she was first hired. But what I didn't hear was these two other employees don't have to do it, but you still have to do it. And I want to know what the company thinks of that.
Right. And I disagree with the plaintiff on that point. I think it's very, it was in the district court's decision that there was door-to-door knocking in Pine Ridge when Ms. Tobacco went to Rapid City. The two part-time employees said they, for safety reasons, believed it was not safe for them to do it. They then went to the research director and said, we don't feel safe. The research director decided, no, we're not going to do door-to-door knock. It's not safe because of shootings and stabbings, and two, it's not effective. There's nothing that is in the record that says that research individual or Dr. Elliott said, you must go door-to-door knocking. That is not in the record at all.
Did Ms. Tobacco ever do door-to-door knocking in Rapid City, or was it just in Pine Ridge?
I believe she testified she did some door-to-door knocking, but there's nothing in the record that says she was required to do it. It was her choice. The other employees felt that they were not safe enough to do it. I want to mention just a couple things about the policies. And Mr. Forney's testimony relative to pretext. As to Mr. Forney, he testified he believed tobacco was not well treated. Judge Smith, in your Sherman case, that's been rejected. What other people believe about whether an employee was treated well or not is not establishing pretext. That Dr. Elliott had knowledge of her complaint about signing a letter does not establish. Timing is not established here. We don't have a very short amount of time relative to the RIF decision and any reporting. And just very lastly, this is not a retaliation case. This is a discrimination case. And time again, this court has said we cannot bootstrap a retaliation case into a discrimination case when you have not pled the retaliation case. We ask that you affirm Judge Seiler's decision. Thank you very much.
I do need to follow up. You had asked about if there was evidence that there was a racial bias. And there is evidence on this race, on this record, that Ms. Elliott considered that when Ms. Tobacco asked to be the lead of a Native American study, she said it would be a conflict of interest. And that's a disputed issue of fact. But that is a very direct disqualification based on race. And that is in the record. I'd also like to say, in terms of like this is a business decision, it's very different than the other cases that we have been relying on in this case, because in this case, there's actually evidence that the HR administrator told the decision maker she had to follow Avera's RIF policies. If she had done that, she would have first called for volunteers. She would have been required to do a searching budget analysis. She would have had to have used objective criteria. There is actually criteria in there. And she would need to do transition services. I just ran out of time. But I did want to tell the court, in the appendix, there is a document that demonstrates that this division of Avera had operating revenue of approximately $8 million in 2022, $7 million in 2021. So it is sort of difficult to imagine how Ms. Tobacco's salary, which is also in the record, could have possibly come close. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pocock. Court thanks both counsel for the argument you've provided to the court this morning. We'll continue to study the case and render a decision. Thank you. Madam Clerk, I believe that concludes our scheduled arguments for the morning.
Yes, sir.
All right. That being the case, the court will be in recess until tomorrow morning.